Brian, I am an alcoholic. So we're going to do 10, 11, and 12, which I'm going to try and do quickly. Two other topics I really need to talk about, traditions and concepts. The shortest form of the 10th step was for me to keep my mouth shut. As I was told by my first sponsor, it was really not necessary that the world hear my opinion on everything. And I actually believed that it was a point in time. And for many years that it was. I mean, if I was in a group, family, social, work, whatever, that that my opinion had to be heard. I mean, I actually thought that and wanted you to, I wanted to engage you and have you listen to me. It's nonsense. Most part, like most of the other things I did during the period of time that I drank, was complete nonsense. It was silly. Childish. It was immature. It was absurd. But, you know, I got in the program and learned a few things. Just a handful. The 10 steps, very simple. Just a daily inventory, very similar to the 4th step inventory, which is done for a period of time. But the 10th step was just done for the one day. That's today. And learned that concept of just living for today, which was a critical element, not so much anymore, but certainly when I first got in. I had to do it not a day at a time, but really an hour at a time the first couple of days. I didn't do a rehab. I just stopped drinking scotch on a Friday, and I made that at a night, not in fine fiddle, so to speak. And then, you know, it got a lot worse, like Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. I was up for a few days, but that was fine. I mean, it was ultimately okay. I don't recommend that, though I'm not a rehab person by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not anti-rehab. I'm not anti-detox. Heard to me a long time ago, watching a lot of people not make it. They have a vested interest in making junk succeed. You succeed, you don't come back. And if you fail, when you leave their rehab, chances are you will come back. And at $1,500 a day and $75,000 to $100,000 every 30 days, they have a real interest in making sure we don't get better. Not to say that all rehabs are bad, all detoxes are bad. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that I think that there's something at work there. I think it's different than in the 30s and 40s and the 50s when you came in, were approached by people in the program. Went a lot of time and knew how to do a lot of things. And I think it's fundamentally wrong when people who have a year or two say things at business meetings like, that's not what I was taught in rehab. It really puts me off. Because the people who are working at the rehabs are generally not the guys who got sober, got a job, wound up involved in a mature relationship, taking care of the kids, paying the taxes. They're at the rehabs for another reason. So it occurs to me, or did to apply parrot, as I said to you, I parrot things. I don't invent this stuff. That, you know, where does it come from? What are they teaching? If they don't know, if they haven't done the step work, how are they going to tell you in 30 days how to get the step work? That's, I think, why a lot of people don't know about traditions and concepts. It comes out of that stuff. The most important line in the 10th step is, for me, is from the Big Book, that all we are given is a daily reprieve and is contingent of our spiritual condition. Fabulous. It says the whole thing right there. It's not contingent. Money there is, my job, who my sponsor is. On one thing, maintenance of my spiritual condition. There's a fallacy that goes around now in contemporary AA that I really feel a responsibility to talk about, and that is that if I go out, and I went out, that I stopped going to meetings. Went out is that you didn't have a spiritual relationship. That line is complete. There is no qualifier at the end of that line which says, depending on the maintenance of your spiritual condition and the number of meetings that you go to. It doesn't say that. More importantly, people return. They say what? Well, it'll be different now because I'm going to go to meetings. Or I am going to meetings. Which is still the basic problem. Still right there in that sentence. We still believe that we're in control of the alcoholism. We want to believe that we're in control of the situation. We're not. That's the entire point of the first step. We have no control. This, you are going to go out. You don't have the spiritual relationship. You're leaving. You're not staying here. You know, some people do, and they live, as I call it, the shoelace theory of existence. It goes on in Manhattan. I hate to keep indicting Manhattan, but it's easy to take shots at them. On the west side of Manhattan, nobody's in the program who doesn't have a deal with an apartment. Nobody. Every single person I met, not some, not a few, all of them. Everybody's in a rent-controlled apartment. My aunt used to have this apartment. I got a break from the landlord. I won the lottery. I'm a trust fund recipient. Everybody's got a deal going. heard of people cutting the mustard. They're not there. And then they go through life. And they come in, as we were just talking together before. They go to the same meeting every Tuesday, and they sit in the same seat, and they talk to the same people, never go out, and they never speak. They're not involved in the rehabs or the gym. And one day the shoelace breaks. One day it does rain. One day the check comes late. Mailman makes a wrong turn, and we go right out the door. Never to be seen again. Program's full of people like that, waiting for circumstances. My alcoholism will wait that to occur in my life if I let it. If I don't pursue a relationship on a daily basis. And the first way to do it, for me, you know, after you've blown through, that's just the day. Sometimes it's difficult because I don't want to tell myself, I don't want to be honest with myself about how poorly I am capable of treating other people. Even after I allege that I'm sober. Even after I allege time. You know, my response to others in a competitive environment is quick, instantaneous, automatic, it's without thinking. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's just not the right thing to do. Got to go back and make the apology. Now, they explain it in the step as the restraint of pen and tongue. It's a great line, and we just don't need to hear from me again. Doing 10 at night and 11 in the morning, I don't think it's possible that you could not have a spiritual experience. 11 being the flip side of 10 in the morning, it says in the big book, on awakening. So when we get up, we're supposed to do 11. What are we going to do during the day? If I set my brain right, I kneel down in the morning. Somebody challenged me this early on in sobriety. Kneel down in the morning and pray, and come back and tell me you had a bad day. And I've never once been able to do that. And there have been a lot of days where I didn't get what I wanted. But I've never, in AA, had a bad day. And I'm coming up on 23 years. Not once. Plenty of times I didn't get what I wanted. Bad day for me is waking up face down on the sidewalk in front of 11 Maiden Lane where I used to live. That's a bad day. Nowadays, what? I didn't get the check on time. The wire didn't hit my account. She said no. She didn't want to go out to dinner. What's the problem? What's the complaint? Kids are fine. The bills are paid. There's food in the refrigerator. The lights are on. What is my complaint? My complaints are all ego-based. I want what I want. I want things. I want stuff. I want it to go my way. I want to go back to being the center of the universe. Fine by me. It's silly. And when I do 11 in the morning, fantastic day. Some people I know and some of the Jesuits I'm involved with, spent some time, there's a Jesuit who was in AA, who wrote a book on the 11th step about meditations, one each week for all 52 weeks. What we do is we send it out email on Sunday morning. So if you were a church-going person, you get it early in the morning on a Sunday. So what I like to do is I go to Mass, I go early, I go off the BlackBerry, and I do the Mass thing. It really helps, I don't know. I offer that up because it's worked a lot for me. It sets off the week, it certainly sets off the day, and it works. I mean, I think one of the great problems that I had when I was drinking, a lot of people in the secular world, quote unquote, have with AA, is that AA works. That's the bottom line. You can't take a guy like me who couldn't do 10 minutes for 25 years. Now it's decades and I haven't had a drink. Not once. How's that possible? The stark raving reality of AA is that it works. But you got to do it. You got to do the best you can. Don't forget, you know, that line from chapter 5. Half measures avail us nothing. We only do it halfway. You don't get half sober. You get no sober. Nothing. Still lost. I'm still out there roaming around, trying to have the demands of my ego met. That makes for a bad day. 11, there's a mechanism there that merits discussion, and that is when you're thinking about the things that you have to do for the day, there are four tests. Well, there's a test, and it's four items. When it comes back to you, I have to go to work. I'm going to relate to this person. I'm going to be nice to him the following way. The answers that come back, things that you think of next, if they are pure, unselfish, honest, and loving, safely conclude that that is the direct patient to you from God. You realize that they are unselfish, dishonest, fulfilled. You can conclude that that's me. That's true. I've done that over and over. I've seen it happen, and I've gone into bad situations. Bad is not the word. Situations where I was questioning whether or not my ego demands would be met. And it's always worked out right. I was set up to do it beforehand. Combine that with stories in the big book, Freedom from Bondage. Knelt down and prayed for the person or thing that you resent the most. You can't lose. I couldn't believe that someone told me to pray for my daughter's mother. I couldn't believe it.
But I was going to actually have to do this.
What are North Vietnamese?
I mean, I just, you know, it's not one of that 4 and 9. Have a nice day. I'm not going to.
I did do it. Ultimately, I did. Because you have to, because you realize. It says in the big book, you know, we realized that we had to do it. And that realization did come, and I did do it, and it was fine. And it was never the problem that I thought it was going to be before. Never hard. It's never been old. Done. So, do 1 through 11, and wind up at 12, and it says, having had a spiritual relationship, or a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. Not a result, but the result. You do 1 through 11, there's no question it's going to happen. I find more often than not, it starts to happen at 4, and it really happens at 9. But some people go out to 11, and all of a sudden that things start to pop. And there is a way that you live, what you understand. And well, nothing is as important to me as the 12th step. Single thing, you know, look at the 12 steps. The first step comes from Silkworth. Second step came from Ed Dowling, who was Bill's Jesuit friend. And 3 through 12 came from the Oxford groups. Nothing's new here. But what they did add, Bob and Bill, to all of that was talking to the other alcohol. And that's the critical item right there. If I'm doing that on any sort of regular basis, have to have a spiritual time, it'll happen. You fight with it, say you don't want to do it, but it'll happen. It'll happen despite me. That means then that I have a responsibility, as you guys recite at the end of each meeting, to make sure that we're there when someone else wants to help. But I got to be in the detox, the jail. I got to be there. It's not a lot of laughs. And the most difficult one is the jail. Because when I go there, I realized many years ago that there was us. Who was there is me. You guys got caught. But if anybody ever really took a look, really knew what I did, I can't tell you what kind of psychotic gunplay went on for years. I always had guns around. I don't know. No idea. I needed a real serious head shrinker to figure that out, what that was all about. And it was the day I got sober, that was all over. But there were holes in the ceilings, holes in the floor. You know, and how many times have we run across the guy in jail who fired the round and it went through the wall and hit somebody? Or gets in the car accident? Do you have any idea how many times I drove drunk? I couldn't give you a number. Tens of... I used to get drunk multiple times in a day and then get in the car. So over 25 years, talking tens of thousands of times. I mean, how much nonsense can you be involved in? But they, who the ones who were in jail, they got caught. I never got caught. It's the only difference between me and them. So they're doing 15 to 20, some serious felony, and I'm floating around free, light and easy, cool breeze, and I'm leaving at 8 o'clock. They're staying. A sobering experience. I got to be there when they get out. Because the way they got in was on the booze, and the way they're going to get out is the program. Or with them while they're in, you can help them get through that period of time. One guy recently who was doing he was looking at a 3 to 5 stretch of state. We didn't know what to say to him anymore. He was really having a tough time with this, as you can imagine. So we went and we had a talk with one of the Jesuits. He did get 3 to 5, but before he went in, he didn't despair. That's the critical difference. Not suffering. I have to suffer in that environment. It's a horrible, horrible place to be. It's a horrible thing to have happen. It does. You have to deal with it. Don't. It's not going to get dealt with. Don't. We've all had it. People who come behind us, they're just not going to have the help that's needed. So I like to do 12-step calls. I used to do a lot of work in intergroup. I don't do much intergroup phone work anymore. And the reason is this. The first time it happened, I just got aggravated. The second time, I started making speeches. The fifth time, that's it. Somebody called, spent 2 hours on the phone with them, talking them into going to a meeting. Then they go, and there's no meeting. Day. Or it's Thanksgiving Day. The secretary of the group never called intergroup to tell the intermeeting was not taking place. Which is why there are traditions. And the point is, annoying. And what do you then say to the guy who, this is back in the days when there were phones, now calls me on the payphone. I'm here at the meeting, and there's no meeting. Still dumbfounded. What are we going to do now? Well, we go get him and all of that, but on a continuing basis, what are we doing with 12-step work? If we can't field a phone call, what about when a guy is, I got 10 years in AA, I was walking down the street, I'm in a bar, and I haven't had the first drink yet, what do I do? You want to leave him there? Do I get up and go? Should we go find him? Out of there?
I think we have a responsibility to do that. Can't leave them there. So when we go then on 12-step calls, the point of having an intergroup is so that that guy knows who to call. That's the reason why intergroups were invented, so that people who wanted to come to AA would call, and we would go get them, like I did. The 8 when I called, Friday night, Saturday, when a gorilla showed up at the door, said, get in the car. I didn't say a word, just get in the car. I had no idea who they were, I didn't know where we were going. I was in no state to ask, and you know, the magic of it all took place. But that's all that had to happen, to go to the meeting. But we don't do that anymore. This is a service organization for the groups. Why General Services exists. I start freaking out when I go to meetings and assemblies, hear people say, well, General Services, what are they, the AA police? Missed the entire thing. It's all gone past us. General Services exists as a service organization for the groups. Want to start printing big books here? No, it's an overwhelming task. General Services does it so that we can buy them from them, so that when we go to the hospital and the jail and the detox, we have big books to hand out. Simple, not terribly difficult. Traditions, there are 12. They are built on the combined experience of all the people who came before us in the early part of the program. Bill worked on these for a long time. Nothing that can happen at group level has not already been done by people who were involved in putting together. So I'm very big on the traditions, but that's about how to run the groups. There are 2 that really merit attention. One is number 7, about the money. Here are the magic numbers. United States of America, 44% of the groups that exist send the money in. Northeast, 30. City, 28. Where's the money? Where's the money? I don't know. I was asked to be a treasurer once of a group on the Upper East Side. I got $4 and a bunch of paper and crumpled up. I said to the guy, I said, Joe, the group's been here for like 35 years. What's going on? I don't know. No, check it out. I went to the Chase branch. Second, spoke to Margie. Oh, yeah. She's a member of them. Yeah, they have an account here. I said, can you check the balance? Sure. There's $53,000 in the account. Have you ever sent it in? But there it sits. There it sat for year after year. Variably, if you leave it long enough, doctrine of S cheat, bank has to turn it over to the state of New York. I feel I have a responsibility when I ask for money from people who really don't have money. You know, this is not like knuckleheads I work with. Go to a meeting, there are people there that actually don't have money. And they're putting money in a basket and can't turn it over. Something's wrong. Something's fundamentally wrong. I do a lot of area assembly work. I would estimate tens of thousands of man hours spent in the last 3 years screwing around talking about the budget for the Grapevine, because the Grapevine's running out of money. But if the groups were sending in the money, this is a non-issue. Write a check. What's the problem? There we are. Weekend after weekend, day after day, talking about things we shouldn't have to talk about because we really have one topic. That's how we're going to carry the message. To that extent, every group should have a 501c3 designation from the IRS, and every group should be a licensed not-for-profit corporation with the state of New York. Only a matter of time. You can take to the bank. You heard it from me. Only a matter of time till the IRS turns around and says, enough, send in the money for the taxes. And if it's not a corporation, you, as the individual treasurer, are personally responsible for the repayment of the money. And they don't care that you weren't there 10 years ago. Pay up. So when I go out and get a sponsee, like all exercise of putting through the steps, et cetera, et cetera, and on day 91, in Brian's world, taking a service position. You've got to be an assistant secretary, assistant treasurer. You've got to start learning things. Day 91, I've put him in that position where he's now going to be personally liable for repayment of the tax when the IRS turns around and says this. How are we going to solve that problem? You've got to do these things. Every group should have a liability policy. There's a staircase out here. I can name 5 knuckleheads in New York City who will sue this group tonight if they were in here at this meeting. Why? Because they'll walk over to that staircase and fall down. People who are going to get sued are going to be your individual group officers. And if you don't have a liability policy, my good friends down on Court Street are making out the summonses and complaints now. I don't care about any of that. What I care about is the fact that it will defer the group from its purpose, from its primary purpose of carrying the message. We have to get past that stuff. The other thing I wanted to talk about was anonymity. I was talking to a guy today, because I had to get a second career on top of the first career, the two in college. line. And we were talking about being on the west side, different bars, et cetera, et cetera. And he said to me, I used to go to the Savoy. And I said, the Savoy? 1973, we went there with guns. And he said, oh, yeah, yeah. And I went, and he said, and then I stopped. And I said, well, stopped what? He said, stopped drinking. So how long has that been going on? He said, 14 years. I said, don't tell me you're a friend of Bill's. Of course, then the conversation ensues. If I go through life and hide from everybody and don't tell them that I'm in the program, then that conversation never takes. Grapevine article, whatever happened to Jim? Guys at work, same thing. Never tells Jim he's in the program. Jim starts drinking, Jim dies. That goes on all the time. I have a responsibility to make sure that around me know that I'm in the program. If I find that uncomfortable in my world, that's too bad. What? Who didn't know I was a drunk when I was drinking? So the landlady? I flipped the car over in the street in front of the house. Who didn't know? The cops? My mother? Who didn't know? The bartenders? Everybody knew. But now, all of a sudden, that I'm in AA, it's an issue? What's the issue? Nothing to talk about. Should be using the last name in those. Does that mean then in the corporate Manhattan environment I should walk in tomorrow and lay it out that I'm an alcoholic? No, of course not. I have to use a little bit of, you know, common sense, because in the real world, as we all know, if they can get an advantage on you or above you for that reason, they'll take it. I don't mean that at all. But when the circumstances are right, appropriate for us to disclose that we are, in fact, members of the program, so we can be useful. Concepts, all 12, define service. Service is great. I love putting away chairs, but that ain't service. Not in the men's group. Anyway, service is going out and jails, detoxes, rehabs. And it has to be done all the time. Have to realize that AA is set up as an inverted triangle. The group's being on top. You, AA. And if you don't have a GSR or an alternate GSR, or then you're disconnected from the rest of the structure of the program. Why every year there is a questionnaire that goes out. I said that meeting, Ray and I have talked about it a number of times, where there are questions that come out. Those are the questions that are discussed every year at the conference, the General Services Conference, at which there are 123 people go. There are 91 delegates, area 49 here, 91 delegates from the continental U.S., Canada. Plus, they include the people who work for General Service. That's the conference. And then they make decisions about what those 10 topics are based on what our responses are. So if you don't go to that meeting, if you don't respond to the questionnaire, then you're now cut off. AA. Have to be included. Must be done. Went out one day. A guy was telling me, well, I've been here for 25 years and no one ever polled me. Well, if you go to the same meeting every week and hide in the same corner, and never speak to anybody except the people as defined by your ego, permissible to be in your universe, then you will not be polled either. If you don't want to be polled, you won't be polled. And then, of course, the argument of, well, you know, this is an anonymous program, and I'm not supposed to have to tell anybody, you know, what my opinion. Where did that come from? That comes from rehabs. That's where that comes from. Program requires us to be active, engaged, involved. On the time in the beginning of when I was in first in AA, I get from you time. You know, I need to give. Giving is a different kind of giving. I need to go. Need to be involved in that stuff. Those things. 3.5 million members of AA. Take the old equation, which is one and one to another. There's supposed to be 8 million people. We're missing 5.5 million people. Who knows where they are? Well, I know where they are. I mean, they're not here. I haven't done my job because I have allowed things to happen like us losing the copyright to the big book. The only copyright we have right now are the stories in 3 and 4. Lost the copyright to 1, first 164 plus the stories. 2, same thing, lost it for 3 and 4. Why? Nobody can look, count up the number of years. Copyright for 75 years. Count from 35 on. What's the problem? This is not higher order mathematics. You don't need to be a rocket scientist. Because I have gone to area assemblies and not started in about things like this. This is how it happens. I have a personal responsibility to make sure it doesn't happen. It's not your fault, it's mine. That's how I see it. But I'm telling you right now, I am now reluctant to sit in the back and not say these things. As I told you when we had the first meeting, when I first came into AA, I met two guys, Inley and Herbie Foote. And I went to a meeting with them in Mayapack. Chuck was up there rambling about something, and McGinley said, excuse me, Chuck, right, everybody was there, 50 people. From the back.
Chuck, you obviously have no idea what you're talking about. Do me a favor, sit down. Tom, go on up there and finish the meeting. And everybody was aghast. But everybody knew time to stop fooling around. Start learning the program. One last thing, and that is, 23 years ago, I called Intergroup and they were there. 23 years ago tomorrow. Thanks.